It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell, in for Rob Ferret. Coming up, a group of prominent conservatives released a new guide today on policy geared towards the middle class, a response to concerns that Republicans are losing touch with middle class issues.
First, our next guest is an expert in the tradition of woodland flute making. The flutes are named after the woodland tribes who played them over the years, the Ojibwe, the Potawatomi, and Menominee.
Our guest learned the craft from teachers among the Ojibwe in Wisconsin and other states, and today he is a teacher and performer himself who has performed in Europe and Japan, and his recordings have sold widely.
Frank Montano joins us now. He drove all the way from Red Cliff in northern Wisconsin to be with us here in the studio. Frank, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I wanted to see if we could do something unusual and just start with you playing some of these flutes that you brought, because they're so beautiful. They're sitting in our studio, and you've made them yourself by hand. Would you start us off with something?
Sure. These are flutes that are, one of them is a really old flute, and it's been on most of the recordings that I put out. It's recordings with North Sound that were in shop goes all over the world at one time.
Wow.
And Target stores and with Nature Sounds. So this is made out of redwood, and this is about 30 years old. One of the first ones that really turned out well.
Beautiful. So thank you so much.
It's a smaller diameter one. And then through the years, people have come up with a lot of different ways of making flutes. And this is a...
And you've got what looks like a double flute there.
This is called a drone flute. And it has one chamber that just carries one note. And it creates sometimes more than two notes you'll hear, because those notes clash together and they create these harmonics. So it's really interesting how a number of these have been around the country that people have gotten from me. I don't know where they are.
So. And you make these by hand. I'm curious, how did you first get started playing the woodland flute?
One of my friends years ago, I had been out in our tradition, we go out and we sit in the woods and we fast. And I was back from a fast, and it was my birthday, and one of my friends came over. And he had a flute that he had gotten from someone because he knew that I wanted because I play a lot of other instruments. You know, since I was probably 4 or 5 years old, I've been playing a lot of different instruments through the years. And the flute was something that I wanted to do, and then he gave me one. And I played it for a while, and then I needed to learn how to make them myself. So I started to look around for elders that I could offer some gifts to and ask about these things. And it just came through time, you know, through learning how to make them and to realizing that the things they were teaching me, the elders, was about the idea of the spirits that come with the flutes and the songs and how to play them and go out and sit in the woods and by the lake and listen to all the nature sounds and learn from what happens there and hope that a song comes to you.
And I read somewhere that when you got that first flute, you realized this was the music you'd been missing your whole life. What did that feel like?
It was really a good feeling, a peaceful feeling. And the learning about the flutes and how the songs are created, I was told that the way I play them, I was told that it creates two songs. And the high notes are speaking with spiritual entities around you. And the lower register of notes speaks to the humans and all the creation here, and then brings those two, an attempt to bring those two together, which creates this feeling of peacefulness and healing.
So
I keep those things in the mind every time I perform with the traditional flutes. And making them is also the thoughts that you know, I was told the thoughts that you're thinking when you're making them goes into those instruments. So I can't just sit and make them anytime I want to. I need to feel right.
So there's a lot more than just sitting down and making it. It's a mental process, a spiritual process too.
Yeah.
Well, you're holding this, I don't know, double flute, it looks like. Could you tell us a little bit about that and then maybe play something from it?
It's called a drone flute, and it has one side that's just a low note, a bass note. And then it's tuned to the low note on the side with six holes in it. And those two start out together, but as the other one moves up the scale, it sometimes creates harmonics and other notes are heard, you know. And it all depends on the room also. So I'll play a little bit on that so you can hear what that double note sounds like. Notice those, those harmonic notes that are created.
The harmonic notes are that's lovely. Is that one any harder to play than the other one?
It takes a little more wind. It depends on how they're constructed, because the way I was taught are bridges that cover a wind chamber in the back and a sound chamber, which starts under this part in the middle. That's a bridge. There's a piece underneath that is made out of birch bark. And that thickness of that determines how much air can get from the wind chamber to the sound chamber. And if that's a little thicker, then it takes more air. So a double flute, you know, takes a lot more air. If you're a smoker, you have a hard time playing these, because I haven't smoked for probably 40 years. But, they do take more air.
Mm. You know? Well, you make these yourself. Where do you get the wood to carve them with? Where do you find that? And does it matter which?
Well, some of it I get, right across the road from where we live. There's a cedar grove over there, and there's trees that are hanging, and it's, you know, some of the wood is dried already. So I'll travel over across the road, and in our traditional way, we offer something when we take something, you know, and we offer gifts, and we take these pieces of wood and use them. And when I do that, if it's a round branch, then you have to, where the sound part is, you cut down and make a flat surface for the sound lip to be cut in there and for that to work. But if it's another piece, you know, I might hunt, sometimes I'll go to a lumber yard and look for their top grade cedar. And it used to be a time when we could get white cedar up here, which is what we have in our area. But now, in the lumber yards, all you can get is red cedar, because they said they take all the white cedar from here, ship it out west. They cut red cedar out there, ship it up here. I don't know why. I think it has to do with money. And then recently, a few years ago, after making that first redwood flute, then I saw an ad in a paper, and an elderly man was, by a place called Grandview, was tearing docks apart and grading all that lumber because people were putting in metal docks. And he volunteered to take their docks down. And then so he has all these sheds full of pieces of redwood that some of it's 100 years old. And I bought a stack of that redwood and some of the more recent flutes. This is a red cedar, but this is one of the examples with the bird head on the end of it.
Yeah, that's a beautiful one. As long as I'm seeing it here, now I've got to hear you play it. Could you leave us with one last piece of music?
But Yeah, I can play that one. I was just gonna. This is another one that I've started to add more to, which is a bass, a lower one. Yeah, but these with the birds head on, they're interesting too because they come out in a lower register. They all have their own little...
they all have their own personality, their own voice.
Yeah, character. They're all different, you know, each one has. And even when you play them, you feel that difference in them.
And they're beautiful. They're works of art, too.
Right.
Well, Frank, thank you so much.
They're all done by hand. And I will be doing a workshop in Lac du Flambeau at the Dillman's Resort in June. So people, I think that's still open for registration. Me and another young man that makes or plays flute, he doesn't make them. We're doing a workshop together in the middle of June I don't know, I have the dates.
If people are interested. Well, we can put that up on the Central Time Facebook page, and we're also going to put up a picture of you playing that that first flute that we heard. Frank, thank you so much for coming down and joining us today. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Frank Montano, musician and craftsman who specializes in woodland flutes.
We'll look ahead to the future of the Republican Party. Back in 2012, Republicans lost the White House to a president whose approval rating had fallen from 67% when he was elected to 40% towards the end of his first term.
Some within the Republican Party began to worry that their candidates may not be speaking the language of most American voters, maybe focusing too much on hot-button items and less on issues relevant to the middle class.
Today, a group of prominent conservative thinkers released a new guide on policies aimed at middle-class voters. It is called Room to Grow: Conservative Reforms for a Limited Government and a Thriving Middle Class. An author of one of the essays in the guide, Ramesh Panuru, is here with us now. He is a senior editor of National Review, a columnist for Bloomberg View, and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start out with the need for this particular set of policies, this new guide. What was it that you and the other folks who took part in writing this thought, what void needed to be filled?
Well, there are, two different voids. One is a policy void, where a lot of us who contributed to the book and some other folks who we talked to were of the view that both parties' agendas are not really responsive to the challenges of this moment. That, in a way, as one of my fellow contributors, Yuval Levin, put it, the Democrats are sort of always stuck in 1965, and the Republicans are always stuck in 1981. We need an agenda that spoke to today's circumstances. And then on the political side, the void is that conservatives in recent years in particular have not had all that much to say about how our agenda would help most people in tangible ways and help them improve their lives. And so those are the two voids that we set out to address.
Well, let's start with the policy void first. You told the New York Times that building a post-Obama conservatism is more important than trying to still beat Obama. First of all, what do you mean by that? And what do you want to see as some of those conservative priorities? What do you want to see coming out of that discussion?
Sure. There has been a tendency among conservatives, and I think you saw this most starkly during the battles over the government shutdown and the debt ceiling last year, to think of politics as a set of confrontations between congressional Republicans and President Obama, where the goal was to have these confrontations, if necessary, sort of stage them and win and break his will. And this is what politics is fundamentally about. And it seems to me that that's just the wrong way to think about it. For one thing, you sort of can't do it. That's not the way presidential parties and congressional parties typically interact. And second, you know, I think it's more important to set out a governing agenda and build, as I said, a post-Obama conservatism. As for what I think the priority should be, the particular focus we have is on domestic policy. And I think that where conservatives have a real opportunity to contribute to the discussion is on cost of living issues, where if you look, if you drill down on the sort of concerns that most people have about the American dream, a lot of them end up being related to the cost of energy, the cost of raising children, the cost of health care, the cost of higher education. So these basic family costs are all places where I think conservative reforms could address those issues and make people's dollars stretch further. And they're places where you've got a bunch of, I think, dysfunctional federal and state policies that could really benefit from the application of conservative insights.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, because a lot of times when people think about Republican policies, and particularly in terms of economics in the middle class, there's sort of this knee-jerk reaction that what it does really is allow wealthy people and corporations to capitalize on their wealth kind of at the expense of a stable middle class. And it sounds like this is that because you're hearing that, or you're just seeing that discussion isn't going anywhere?
I'm sorry, I missed that last bit. Some sort of phone connection. Say that again, please.
Sure. I was saying you bring up that whole idea of the economics of the middle class and making some of these priorities domestic priorities. But at the same time, the criticism we hear of a lot of Republican economic policies is that it focuses
right
on the wealthy.
Right. I catch that part, but it's sort of pro-rich, pro-big business.
Right.
Well, that is a very long-standing public perception about the Republican Party. You can go back to just about the beginning of modern polling, like 1955, you will find that the Republican Party is associated with big business. But I think that it has been a problem for the Republican Party that is of long standing and has helped to account for a lot of its weakness through the decades, but it's gotten worse in recent years because it has become a little bit, you know, people thought of it as a pro-big business party, but they also thought it had something to offer other people on the economy, and it has become in recent years, I think, a little exclusively associated with rich people and big business.
And the second part of your issues here, you refer to what you call the political side of some of the discussions, the debates that we've been hearing lately. And I was reminded when I was reading this of a political cartoon I saw a week or two ago. And there were a whole bunch of issues in the background of the cartoon. And in the front was a GOP person. And they're saying, Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. Is that the sort of thing that you're referring to, that you start talking about serious issues and they sort of get, I don't know if hijacked's the right term, but these other issues come up that aren't really relevant to some of those?
Well, you know, look, I think successful political parties need to be able to talk about multiple subjects simultaneously. And so it's not, for me, a question of don't talk about these other issues. It's you've got to have this basic bread and butter agenda, or people aren't going to listen to what you have to say about these other issues.
Is it too late for that? You know, I mean, because we've got a lot of polarization now. Are people ready for something, whether you call it bread or butter or more moderate or more realistic or however you phrase it? Are people going to pay attention to that?
I think so. You know, look, I think that people are pretty fair-minded in general. Not everybody, of course. And that, you know, look, if one of the presidential nominees in 2016 has a fresh conservative message, I think people will be willing to give it a hearing. You know, not everybody, not diehard liberals, but certainly I think the people in the middle whose loyalties are up for grabs.
And lastly, in the last minute or so, how do you hope that Republican candidates in the upcoming elections will take a look at this guide and do something with it? What do you want to see this used for?
I would like to see all kinds of candidates, and I think primarily it would be Republicans who would be interested in the ideas, but it would be great if Democrats were too, were to take up some of these ideas on health care, on higher education, on a pro-family tax reform. And I would say particularly for the Republicans running for Congress, you know, the temptation is just going to be to run on an anti-Obama, anti-Obamacare message. But I think if you want to build a new governing majority that can actually make policy a policy difference, you've got to start building that case now and laying out some ideas.
Well, Ramesh, thank you so much for joining us.
You are welcome.
We've been speaking with Ramesh Panuru. He is senior editor of National Review, a columnist for Bloomberg View, and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He contributed to a new policy guide released today by prominent conservatives aimed at tackling middle-class issues.
And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the most important policies to support the middle class on education, taxes, jobs, and health care?
Absolutely. This new guide is aimed at attracting middle-class voters. What sort of proposals are needed?
800-642-1234. We're taking your calls next. 800-642-1234. This is Central Time. We're taking your calls right now as we continue our discussion about policies aimed at helping the middle class. You can reach us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Taking your calls on what policies you think are needed to help the middle class. And we just heard from a guest talking about a new conservative manifesto, as they're calling it, aimed at bringing some of those policies to the forefront. What would you like to see? Call us now.
800-642-1234. We just heard from Manesh Panuru, who said that they're going to be voters who are open to new ideas in the coming election and the coming years. Some voters who are in the middle. And do you think that? Do you think there are voters who are up for grabs in the upcoming midterm and presidential elections? Our guest also said that both parties, Democrats and Republicans, the agendas of both parties right now are not being responsive to the middle class. And what kind of policies do you see as being responsive to the middle class from a conservative viewpoint? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can also post to the Central Time Facebook page.
Is there anybody out there right now who you think is speaking to the middle class, or do you think that some of the other political big-ticket items right now, we've been hearing about immigration reform for a long time, Benghazi for a long time, as we were hearing about, some of the marquee items in political news have not been about the middle class. What would you like to see brought to the table for discussion? Our number, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You are our guest right now, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
And this is all being talked about in the context today of a group of prominent conservatives releasing what they call a policy guide, about a 120-page policy guide, as I understand it, aimed at addressing some of those issues. It's called Room to Grow: Conservative Reforms for a Limited Government and a Thriving Middle Class. 800-642-1234.
Does the Republican Party, do you think, the Republican Party have the potential to speak at this moment to the middle class, to articulate some of the malaise that the middle class may be feeling, and to create policies around it, to bring them back on board for conservatives? 800-642-1234. We're going to go first to Greg in Montchez. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. A couple of the things that I have problems with the conservative viewpoint and come down to the reluctance to engage in anything around campaign finance reform, even though I know a great deal of a great many of conservatives who are really sick of all the money in our political life these days. And the other thing is the conservative issues on environmental issues. There just doesn't seem to be any sensitivity to environmental causes, and chiefly among them, of course, is climate change. And I think that there's a lot of good reasons for their reluctance. A lot of it has to do with money and a big campaign to basically combat the science.
Greg, thanks so much for that call. We appreciate that. And so
argument there that what Republicans could do is focus on campaign finance reform and take a closer look at some environmental issues. Also heard from Roxanne in Madison, who sent us an email, who said, I'd like to see a candidate with a solid plan to help lower costs for higher education. Student debt is crippling the middle class and needs to be addressed. And I know today in that conservative manifesto, as they are calling it, that taking a look at education is one of the items that they are taking a look at in terms of trying to address middle class issues. Let's go to Sean now, and Sean joins us from Kenosha. Hi, Sean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk about unions. I've benefited from union labor for the last 8 years, and it seems like it's been a strong Republican agenda to squash them. And, you know, if we really want to help the middle class, I would suggest unions as a path towards that.
Okay. Do you realistically see, I have not read this policy guide. Do you believe that that is something that it could actually wind up on their agenda somewhere? All right. Well, we'll move on then. It looks like as though we may have lost Sean. Let's go to Wendell, who joins us from Marinette. Hi, Wendell.
Hi. I'd just like to mention that I think one of the policies that I'm not sure the conservatives are going to ever get is that the government needs to provide things for their people. And one of the things the middle class needs are transportation options. We in Wisconsin are really suffering because we have politicians that have done everything possible to thwart the development and the expansion of the Amtrak program. And starting with the governor originally turning back $810 million, that would have helped Wisconsinites, and this is not helping the middle class at all. So, you know, this report may sound nice and it may be attractive to have people take a look at them, but the bottom line is that the conservatives have to figure out that there is a role for government in a population that's over 310 million people in our country, and they need to get on board with the collectiveness of a community of citizens and not just people out for themselves individually.
Very good. Thank you for that call, Wendell. And Ray joins us now from Stevens Point.
Yeah, I think a conservative step to help the middle class would be to raise the minimum wage. Rather than finding more ways to give people handouts, if someone's willing to show up, work hard, work a job, I'd rather see them make more than $7.25 an hour and be less dependent on the government.
Ray, thanks so much for that call. And let's go to Wausau now. And Matt is with us from Wausau.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What I'd like to say is the Republican manifesto or whatever it is, what they need to do is not only say they have a message, they need to do some legislation that actually gets voters on their side. And we haven't seen that. If you want women to vote for you, put forward some legislation that helps them. And that's all I've got. Thanks.
Thanks so much for that call. We're talking about policies that conservatives might use to attract more middle-class voters. And we're doing it in the context of an interview we just did with one of the authors of what they're calling a conservative manifesto. The idea being that conservatives are not doing enough to attract middle-class voters. What sorts of policies would you propose that conservatives take a look at if they want to attract middle-class voters? 800-642-1234. Taj is with us from Toma. Hi, Taj.
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to talk about the relationship, you know, the government and the big banks, you know. Going back to the bailouts, you know, and all the foreclosures, you know, you have a real problem there.
So do you have a proposal that a policy proposal that conservatives could use to address that?
I certainly do. You often hear from a conservative standpoint that, you know, capitalism is good. It let the businesses fail on their own. Well, then why not let these big banks fail if they're going to? Why does the government need to get involved with that?
All right, Taj, thanks so much for the call. And thanks to all of you for all of your calls. We've been talking about policies that you think will help the middle class, specifically policies that might be proposed by conservatives. And we do it in light of a group of prominent conservatives released a new policy guide today aimed at addressing middle class issues after some within the party expressed concern about attracting middle class voters. Summer festivals are back in Wisconsin, or they will be in a week or so. Some towns have had festivals already, of course. Broadfest coming up this weekend in Madison. The Summerfest lineup in Milwaukee is now out. But now here's the question we would like to know the answer to. What is your favorite summer festival here in Wisconsin? There are lots of them, and they are all over the state. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post your comments, your festival recommendations on the Central Time Facebook page.
Maybe you help organize them. Maybe you make a thing of traveling around the state to go to your favorite festivals. Tell us about what you've liked best as you've sampled festivals in Wisconsin over the years. 800-642-1234. And let's go to our first caller now. We've got Mike on the line in Eau Claire. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. What is your vote?
Oh, Tuesday Night Blues in Eau Claire. Every Tuesday night from Memorial Day to Labor Day, free music, mini festival with food vendors, jewelry vendors. It's just like a, like I say, a mini festival happens every Tuesday night.
Where does it take
summer.
Place? Where in Eau Claire does it happen?
It happens at Owen Park on the river, right by the university, across from downtown. Starts at 6:30, goes till about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Gotcha. That sounds fantastic. And the riverfront in Eau Claire is really beautiful. I can vouch for that. So that's a new one, Tuesday Night Blues.
Tuesday Night Blues is kind of a traveling festival throughout the summer. Not a traveling festival, of a constant festival, constant presence throughout the summer. Joanne is with us from Cuba City. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What festivals do you want to go to?
Well, I do a lot of festivals, but my favorite is Art Fair Off the Square in Madison on July 12th and 13th this year. It's in conjunction with On the Square, but Off the Square is all Wisconsin artists, so I wanted to put a plug in for the local artists and buy local.
All right, Joanne, thanks so much for the call, and it's a terrific fest. I can vouch for that because there is the festival on the square, which, as you know, is right there on the Capitol Square. And just a few steps off the square, you can find Joanne and all of her colleagues festing and selling art.
Festing. Is that
yeah,
a verb?
It is now.
To fest.
I have fested.
Well, we are talking about your favorite summer festivals here in Wisconsin. There are a lot of them, lots mm-hmm. of them that we hadn't heard of. Gene was just telling me about Butterfest.
In Sparta. I like Butterfest.
There's a cheese curd festival in Ellsworth. There is a country fest in Cadott. Just a sampling. One that I am definitely going to come heck or high water is the Cedarburg Strawberry Festival.
And what is the focus of that?
Strawberries. There's strawberries.
And they do what with the strawberries?
I think they eat them in every possible form possible is my take on it. I haven't been yet, but it sounds, I'm a big fan of strawberries, as you may have guessed. Mm-hmm. So that is coming up in June, strawberry season. What about you? We've got an open line for you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You are our guest right now. Help share the wealth of Wisconsin, and maybe you can help clue us into a festival that we've never heard about.
Yeah, and I will be at Riverfest, which is in Lacrosse, right at Riverside Park down by the Mississippi River. I think it starts July 3rd. It'll run through the 4th and 5th into that Saturday anyway. And as a bonus this year, you know who's playing there, right? Rick Springfield.
And you love that song.
I do. Jesse's Girl.
I'll
be in the audience.
Everybody loves
with
that
my
song.
Cigarette lighter. I don't even have a cigarette lighter. I'm going to have to get one just for the occasion.
Perfect.
Let's go to Mike, who joins us in Elephant Bay. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What festival you got for us?
Well, Old Ellison Bay Days, and that'll be the last full weekend in June. And it's in Ellison Bay, Wisconsin, on the bay side of beautiful Door County.
And what can I expect when I attend?
Well, there's going to be artists there with their wares to sell. There's going to be lots of activities for kids. There's going to be the Slow Bike Contest. And so there is a race course, and people that sign up can race a bicycle but they have to post the slowest score to win.
Yeah, I win that one every year. Mike, thanks so much for the call.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Mike. And we'll move next to Steve in Delafield. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm just calling. I wanted to mention the Waukesha Freeman Friday Night Live, which starts June 6th and runs every Friday night from 6:30 to 9 in downtown Waukesha. They close the streets. There are six different stages, all different types of music. It's all live music, and like I say, this runs through September, from June 6th through September, every Friday night. And they close the streets so people can come on down with their kids in strollers, their dogs. It's just a real homey, good place to hear some good free music.
Great. Free music. That's always a big draw, and it's so nice to be able to move life outdoors in the summertime. We've been indoors all winter, so fantastic suggestion there from Steve. Thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, we'll enjoy these 3 weeks of summer when we get them, right? Gigi on Facebook recommends the Oshkosh Irish Fest, which is coming up on June 12th through 15th. And then, of course, we can't forget there's another Irish Fest, at least one that I know of, in Milwaukee, and that's usually in August sometime, so... If you're Irish, you got at least two occasions to go do some festing.
You're determined to use that word, aren't you?
I love festing. Let's go to David now in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi there. The one I'm looking forward to is this weekend, actually, in Milwaukee. It's called the Gathering by the Waters Festival, and it's the beginning of the sailing season for the state flagship, the schooner Dennis Sullivan, and we're having a big festival there, and... be a lot of music and food, and there'll be a sing-along tribute to Pete Seeger because Pete Seeger was influential in getting the Dennis Sullivan built because of the Clearwater.
Yeah, the Dennis Sullivan is a fantastic, fantastic thing to have in Milwaukee. Is it going to be sailing this weekend or just be on display?
Well, they're going to do a you know parade of sail sort of thing, sail in at the beginning of the festival at 10 o'clock, and then they'll be doing deck tours during the day. So you can come down and actually get on the deck of the boat and see it. And then at 11:30, we're having a big hootenanny.
Wow, that sounds like a blast. And I recommend that deck tour on the Dennis Sullivan if you haven't done it.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks for that. And let's go to Jim in Green Bay. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Calling up in July. They have the Polka Days Festival in Pulaski. I believe it runs from the 16th to the 20th in July.
I've heard of Pulaski Polka Days. So what happens? Is there just polka music and dancing everywhere?
I believe there's typically five stages. So there'll be three to five bands playing at one time every afternoon and evening, and lots of ethnic food. So, and I believe a parade on Sunday.
Great. Well, that sounds fun, too. Thanks so much for telling us about that. Gene, do you polka?
I polka very badly. You know, almost everybody in Wisconsin polkas at some level.
At some point in their lives.
Yep, and I'm at the lower end of the spectrum, but I have not, I can do it. It ain't pretty, but I can do it.
Well, maybe the Polka Fest would up your game a little bit there.
Doesn't take much, you know. And we got a note here that somebody recommends the Hodeg Festival up in Rhinelander. I don't know if any actual Hodegs will be there. But it's still worth a stop up into Rhinelander and a beautiful part of the country, especially in summer. What else we got there?
Well, we have Jeanette who's joining us next in Walworth. Hey, Jeanette.
Hi, good afternoon. I was going to recommend the Corn Fest in Darien, Wisconsin, which is south on 43. It's probably one of the last towns before you get into Illinois. And they have the Corn Fest during Labor Day weekend. You get coupons for at least three free ears of corn, which are absolutely delicious. And they'll have vendors there from ice cream vendors, jewelry. It's like a mini fair. It's wonderful.
And lots of corn, I'm taking it.
Oh, my, my. Yes, and very good corn.
How do they prepare their corn? What is the Darien way?
Well, I'm sure it would be open pit grilling.
All right.
It's wonderful.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. Another one I hadn't heard about.
And the downside, of course, Labor Day means summer's over. But you know what? I'm being an optimist. We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who recommends the Burlington Chocolate Festival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and chocolate, of course, plays a big part in Burlington's history. And that is coming up. I missed the date, though, but that's coming up in the next month or so. 800-642-1234. We are talking about summer festivals in Wisconsin. What is your favorite summer festival? Where is it? What do you do? And do you recommend people go there? Give us a call and let us know. 800-642-1234. Let's go to Alexander. And Alexandra, it looks like, is joining us from Waterford. Hi.
Hello. Hi. I love to go to ethnic festivals. I enjoy Polish festival. You have a lot of food, great music. And if you like to volunteer, you can get the beautiful food for free and to do a little bit work. On Sunday, it's a mess. You can sing with a choir. You can enjoy 17 regions of Poland, the songs, dancing, colorful outfits, beautiful music. It's really, really very, very enriched.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Polish Festival, that's in Milwaukee, and I believe that's also at the Summerfest grounds. Jim joins us, and Jim is in Tomahawk. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how are you folks today?
We're doing great.
We're finally getting some spring days up here. So this weekend is the Tomahawk Main Street Memories Car Show. It's sponsored by the Tomahawk Main Street. And that's all day Sunday. We close off the Main Street, put about 300-plus antique cars, and they have usual food vendors and craft vendors and balloon ladies and petting zoo. So it's a fun day on Sunday. And then the Saturday before, we have an antique motorcycle show, which is Saturday, this Saturday. Saturday afternoon from noon to 5, we close off one block and have antique motorcycles. And then Sunday all day, come downtown Tomahawk and enjoy the Northwoods.
Well, here's hoping for some good weather. We got a note, by the way, from our producer that Burlington Chocolate Fest is coming up this weekend.
Right, so if you want to get your chocolate on, you got to do it this weekend in Burlington. Okay, I think we can get in one more call, maybe two. Let's see. Tim is joining us in New Glarus. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What is your vote?
Well, we have a festival in New Glarus called Folkfest, which is the celebration of Swiss independence, but it's open to everybody. There's music, food, dancing, ethnic outfits, yodeling, alphorn playing, and all those kinds of things.
Okay, alphorn playing, that would be neat.
That is neat, actually.
I've never seen
They're loud.
Are they loud?
Oh, yeah.
It's not an indoor instrument, no. It's kind of an outdoor thing.
So we won't have an alphornist in studio, is what you're saying.
You'd have to turn your volume way, way down to make it work inside.
All right. Interesting. So lots of opportunities to learn about Swiss Independence Day and Swiss culture in New Glarus at Folksfest.
Yep.
Thanks
a lot
for that.
We also had a note about broiler days in Arcadia. Mount Horeb's got an art tour going on this weekend. Lots and lots of things to do. So thanks to everybody for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you can keep on sharing your favorite Wisconsin summer festivals at the Central Time Facebook page. And maybe if you're looking for one to go to, check it out there. See what people have recommended.